Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we have two stories by Thunderpuff, who you'll find on Medium.com. And here is That Time I Almost Froze to Death at Work, or Why I Spent Christmas in the Attic. I just graduated from college, and the reality of post-college life hit me like a bucket of cold, heavily polluted water. The economy had recently taken a large nosedive, and what just months prior had been a job seeker's Tinder app suddenly lurched into the career equivalent of garlic breath and face herpes. Look, we've all been there. After weeks of fruitless job hunting, I was beginning to fear I'd end up as the weirdo who lives in her parents' garage and is frequently seen at the grocery store in her pajamas with a cart full of kitty litter and Fritos. So when I first saw the advertisement for an admin assistant job, I pounced on it. Thanks to some quality bullshitting skills and a sign around my neck that read, "I'm desperate, exploit me," I managed to land the position, and by mid-October, I had health insurance. It's a wonderful office. The company was located in a century-old building, complete with Gothic spires, no elevator, and noisy but effective radiator heating. My office was on the second floor, had a large window, and approximately 500 square feet of mostly empty floor space. I could have easily accommodated a small jazzercise class in the space between my desk and the door. In hindsight, I should have sublet. I frolicked happily in my palatial office, filing and collating and performing spastic cartwheels, which may have, more than once, resulted in the knocking over of a lamp. But after a month of living it up, I received word that my giant workspace was due for a remodel. At first, I assumed this was good news, as in great, maybe a cozy sofa with some throw pillows. Oh, and every time I touch the file cabinet, I get an electrical shock and my heart flutters for 20 minutes. So, ditch the carpet. Unfortunately, I quickly learned remodel meant lowly entry-level employees aren't supposed to have big offices. Get the fuck out. I was also informed that I would be temporarily relocated to the top floor while they secured more permanent accommodations for me. Though I love my spacious office, I was excited by the prospect of moving as my current setup was right next door to my boss. Having a supervisor so close that she could pop over at any second, forcing me to panic-click my mouse and close whatever non-work-related thing I had open, 'twas before MySpace, so probably Hotmail, was mildly stressful. A few well-placed staircases would lessen the anxiety. The Island of Misfit Toys. I soon realized that my new office, the only unnumbered room on the fifth floor, was located in the farthest corner, through a doorway that was lopped off at an angle and required anyone taller than the Lollipop Guild to crouch. Not only did my entryway bring to mind the process of crawling through a submarine hatch, but there was a large wooden beam running diagonally across the floor. Ah, support beams for the roof. What better way to say, "Welcome, Hunchback." I set my boxes down and took a seat at the old wooden desk wedged between the slope ceiling and what felt to be the encroaching wall. I was literally shoved into a crevice in the darkest crook of an already tiny room. Not to get too Dickensian here, but I was Bob Cratchit. My first full day in the bell tower kicked off with the sight of my own icy breath as I wriggled through my porthole and decided against removing my coat. After scouring my office for anything resembling a heat source, it became apparent that I was expected to light myself on fire in order to stay warm. So I hiked down to base camp, my boss's office, and was given a small, small space heater that I gratefully shoved under my desk and which immediately shut down power to the west wing of the building. I huddled in the corner while a couple of IT guys determined if the building's wiring could handle the load necessary to keep my eyelids from freezing shut. Eventually, after rearranging plugs and asking everyone on the floor to only use their printers, faxes, and lights when absolutely necessary, I was able to fire up the tiny heater and luxuriate in an 18-inch area of warmth around my ankles. I'm a cotton-headed ninny muggins. Obviously, before I accepted my new role as frozen corpse lodged between the plasterboard and rafters, I should have asked a few important questions. Questions that anyone with a decent dose of self-esteem, experience, or teeny-tiny baby balls would have asked. Is this office technically legal, or are we in a Geneva Convention gray area here? Did I perpetrate some fatal stapling error that pissed off the wrong guy or gal? And if so, why does he or she find me so irredeemable that he or she wants me to die a slow and agonizing death from exposure? I mean, just because I can still recite the alphabet out loud, mostly after E, does cramming me into a Siberian sky yurt really seem proportional to my crime? Should I be concerned that, since I now inhabit a tiny hollowed-out area in the drywall, some over-eager contractor might inadvertently seal me inside my office while my screams are dismissed as sounds of the building settling? The mice living in the bottom drawer of my desk are gifted collators. Can I get reimbursed for rodent food? But being a newbie worker, an insecure, fresh-faced kid who assumed work eventually caused loss of feeling in the face, hands, and feet anyway, I just went with it. 'Tis the season, too. I hate my life. While things were not great at work, lucky for me, my social life was also in the shitter. 1 week before Christmas, on a Sunday evening, my boyfriend broke up with me. I had an hour-long commute, and by the time I arrived to the office Monday morning, I was a cautionary tale for why waterproof mascara is a thing. With a few more crying jags, no desire to eat, and a crushing pain in my chest, I immediately diagnosed myself as suffering a major depressive episode. I figured I was nipping it in the bud. So I picked up my office phone and called my mom, and my sister, and my best friend, and eventually my doctor to get a referral to a therapist to determine that, yes, my insurance does cover therapy. Phew. Later that afternoon, I received a very rare visit from my supervisor. She admired the sorry strand of holiday lights I'd strung in a feeble attempt to visually warm my hovel, the culprit of many mysterious building-wide brownouts, and ask, "So, how's everything going with your new space?" My new space? Okay, seriously, just to be honest with me, I'm the subject in some fucked-up psych experiment, right? This is all taking place in a university basement somewhere with a bunch of douchey grad students watching me through a two-way mirror. Oh, God, is this that movie Altered States? I meekly replied, "Well, it's a little chilly." I stopped myself worrying that complaining might lead to dismissal. "But it's fine. I just use my heater." She finally noticed that my face looked like a soggy baked ham streaked with mascara and asked, "Is something wrong?" I took a deep breath and, against my natural inclination to never express human emotion around my boss, admitted, "Well, my boyfriend broke up with me last night." She made a tsk sound and tilted her head. "I'm sorry to hear that." After a long pause, she started, "You know, a few years ago, a friend of mine, her fiancé left her. They'd been together for years, and it was right around Valentine's Day. Well, she decided she'd throw herself into her work and just focused all her energy on her job. It really helped. I'd recommend you do the same. It'll get your mind off things." "Oh, okay. So throw myself into the exotic, fast-paced world of collation? How about if I just throw myself into the paper shredder instead?" She continued, "Speaking of work, I've noticed you haven't done the filing for a couple days now." I nodded. "Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I'll make sure to take care of it right away." This filing she spoke of revolved around a truly massive bank of filing cabinets located, inconveniently for me, in her office. On her desk was a large inbox in which she tossed every last tiny scrap of paper she'd ever seen, touched, or blew her nose on. It was part of my college degree-required job to frequent this basket and organize every pathetic fragment. The following morning, I suited up in climbing gear and headed down to file. As usual, when I arrived, her door was closed. I'd been instructed not to knock unless it was an emergency, so I stood there contemplating what exactly constituted a filing emergency and weighing whether or not her journeying upstairs to my office meant this right here is a filing emergency. I ultimately decided that there is no such thing as a filing emergency and left. 'Twas the Friday after Christmas. I hadn't done any filing that particular day, so when my boss appeared in my office at exactly 4:55 p.m., I wasn't surprised. I figured she was simply there to remind me that filing must be done daily, no, thrice daily, and wish me a happy new year. She closed the door to my tiny dorm fridge and carefully stepped over the protruding rafter and pulled up a folding chair. Before I said a word, she declared, "I've decided to let you go." I imagine I let out a small breath, nothing verbal, just the sound of air passing my lips like after a slow-motion punch in the stomach. "So, you're saying my stapling skills are that fucking bad?" She continued, "HR notified me that you've made quite a few long-distance phone calls from your office phone. That's just not acceptable." Oh, shit. Shit. Shit! In my depression-like stupor, it hadn't occurred to me that just because my friends, therapist, and mother all lived about 30 miles away in another county and thus another area code, all those calls, I'm guessing around a dozen over a week, came with a long-distance charge. I just sat there, horrified that my emotional meltdown had initiated a series of events that would probably crescendo with me subdividing my parents' garage with cardboard and duct tape. This is the den, and over there by the hot plate, that's the kitchen. I don't actually have a bathroom. I started to cry. But I just... Finally, I mustered. "Is there anything I can do?" "No. The decision's been made. Plus, you've let the filing pile up." "Oh, for fuck's sake! What are there? 3 unfiled sticky notes in that tub of used Kleenex you call an inbox? My life is falling apart. I'm brokenhearted. I work in an ice turret. And I've seriously thought about contracting chlamydia just so I can feel a burning sensation." Even Bob Cratchit managed to keep his shitty little job. Sure, he was woefully underpaid, overworked, and verbally abused, but he still succeeded in maintaining a measly paycheck. He didn't just not file or stupidly call the therapy hotline from his office. He didn't let his silly little breakup ruin his chance to collate. Still sobbing, I took the strand of holiday lights and gathered my things. I carried my box to the long, dark stairs, my footsteps echoing against the empty halls. Like an unemployed slug, I slithered out into the cold night air. Well, I guess now I have to break the lease on my apartment, and I better pick up some Fritos on the way home, and maybe a little rum. If you like this story, and you'd like to hear more stories like this more often, like 2 or 3 times a week, please consider becoming my podcast patron. Just click the link on my Podbean page. And here is Adventures in Public Speaking, an incomplete memoir of abject fear. Generally speaking, most people who go to college straight out of high school only spend a single year as a college sophomore. I spent 3. There are numerous reasons for this, some of which could constitute an entire post unto themselves, but for our purpose here today, I'll just sum it up by saying, I was in community college, so how the fuck should I know? At the time, junior college was relatively cheap, meaning I could easily pay my tuition with a part-time job and still afford gas and food and concert tickets. During these, what I call the best years of my life, I managed to learn a few valuable lessons. Never sign up for anything that starts before 9 a.m. Never pay for parking unless you're guaranteed a space. And unless you want your ceramics instructor to think you're an unholy child of the corn, don't keep molding your pinch pots into tiny demonic skulls. I was listening to a lot of Rob Zombie at the time. But mostly, I just learned to avoid classes I didn't like, anything that made me uncomfortable, economics, or required too much reading, college. Eventually, however, I knew I had to move on. I was getting older, my friends were leaving to become juniors, and my elective credits were piling up like a hoarder's newspapers. So before I could proceed to the big girl college with all those fancy 4-year degrees, I finally accepted the inevitable. I had to take the most terrifying class of all. Speech class! I'd previously dodged speech with the intensity of a smelly 6-year-old who hates taking a bath. Except I generally see the purpose in bathing, and I still have trouble seeing the point in speech, unless the point was to make me consider dropping out of college and selling my organs to pay rent, in which case, bravo! So at the end of the school year, a similarly avoidant friend and I gathered our collective strength and, together, we enrolled in speech for the fall semester. I then proceeded to spend the summer ignoring what lay ahead, pretending life would never change, acting as if this amazing world free of public speaking could go on forever. As soon as I woke up on that first morning of the new term, a terrible realization hit me. I have to talk out loud in front of other people. Oh my God! As I walked to class, a bowling ball of dread lodged in my gut. My pulse rate was a mix of death metal and cocaine. My underarms taunted the strength of my secret roll-on. I tried to comfort myself with the knowledge that a familiar face awaited me. If nothing else, at least I wouldn't be alone in my nausea. My friend and I could suffer together. And there she stood, waiting outside class. I shook my head and grimaced. I hate this so much. Well, the thing is, she paused and looked at the ground. What? I asked, taking a deep breath. I don't have to take it this semester, so I dropped the class. For the remainder of this story, she shall be known as Lando Calrissian Jerkface McBackstabber. At first, I thought the knife Lando had plunged into my diaphragm punctured my lungs. I just stood there for a moment as my anxiety mixed with disappointment and became terror. I thought about walking away. Perhaps I could quietly drop out of society. But I was too angry and indignant to quit. I wouldn't give her the satisfaction. Plus, I wanted to burn a hole in her face with my eyes. I glared at her. Okay, well, I have to get to class now. Wounded and betrayed, I forced myself to open the classroom door. I tried pathetically to think positive, somewhat delusional thoughts. Come on, it's just another class. You can totally do this. People give speeches all day, every day. In a hell. Speech was, hands down, the most universally dreaded course in the history of college courses. Though I've been told that organic chemistry is more dreaded, but it's not mandatory, so if you're taking it, you're a masochist or a science major or both. Not surprisingly, as a required subject, the classroom was quickly filling up with procrastinating students, all trying to add at the last possible minute. Bodies soon lined the back wall and sides of the room, creating a 360-degree firing squad, a massacre waiting to happen. Good morning, the instructor announced. Once we get roll call out of the way, each of you will share a 2-minute, timed, bio in front of the class. He scanned the room to make sure we were paying attention and enunciated, "Everyone!" Well, that's assuming I won't puncture my vocal cords with this ruler that I fashioned into a shiv. Lando was absolutely right. I should have bailed. Instead of devolving into a soft blob of public speaking virgin dough and sprouting sweat from my upper lip, I could be eating hash browns and drinking a breakfast Pepsi right now at Denny's. Since I'd started out the morning registering a 10.5 on the Richter Appreciation Magnitude Scale, I was in danger of having the world's stupidest panic attack. And when you're shy and introverted and abandoned, things can always get worse. How much worse? Where do you go once you max out the level of anxiety your mind can comprehend and you start drifting away from your body as if your soul just proclaimed, "This is bullshit, I'm out of here"? You go into full-blown flight mode, not fight. Screw fight. Fighting's for lunatics and the Irish. Which, since I'm Irish, should mean I'm prone to fighting, but I've heard that really only applies if there's Guinness involved. Fight was never even an option. So while everyone else is preparing to give the best damn speeches of their lives, you're planning your escape. You'll live in the woods, in a thatch of twigs and leaves. You'll eat berries and dirt. You'll miss the internet and waffle fries, like a lot. But at least the only speeches you'll ever give will be sparsely attended by mostly non-English-speaking woodland creatures. And you dry heave. With a class that massive, it takes a hell of a long time for everyone to reach the podium and share 120 seconds worth of grudging self-disclosures. So when I realized there were a dozen of us yet to speak and only 10 minutes remaining, I thought maybe, just maybe, I'd make it out of this public shaming alive. With only 6 minutes left, I actually got cocky. I am so not getting up there. Speech class is easy. At this point, I was clearly out of my mind. The fear had finally broken me. That's when I sighed the sort of forceful sigh that draws unwanted attention. So loudly, in fact, everyone seated around me turned and stared as if I just screamed, "Speech class is for dildos!" It is, but whatever. Turns out I sighed prematurely. The sadistic ass of a speech teacher, who I suspect pleasured himself to secret Toastmasters recordings of people saying, like, suddenly pointed a heartless finger in my direction like an executioner choosing his next victim, the village idiot. "You bastard." The classroom was absolutely silent. I lifted myself from my seat and caught the end of my T-shirt on the corner of the desk, sliding it a millimeter along the floor as its metal legs made the smallest of screeching noises. But it was a sonic boom of embarrassment. I hadn't spoken a word, and I'd already felt humiliation at my inability to stand up without incident. Once at the podium, I wasn't sure where to put my hands. At my sides? Covering my face as tears of shame rolled down my cheeks? Or should I just grip the sides of the lectern so tightly that we fuse together and I have to drag it with me to poli-sci? All eyes were upon me, their pupils dilated, their mouths dripping with lust for fresh, insecure meat. There's something so primal about the fear of public speaking, to be the object of such intense fixation, the audience watching my every move like a pack of hyenas stalking a wounded bunny, just waiting for me to say something stupid or boring, or, God forbid, both. Then they'd pounce, their fangs and claws tearing my timid little heart from my chest. I'd lie there, motionless, whispering for them to make it quick. If I live through this, I'll have to give another speech. Just fucking kill me. It's one thing to pick a random topic out of a hat, then go home and research and rehearse for a week. It's quite another to stand in front of a room packed with strangers and decide what personal information is appropriate, relevant, and not too stupid to share. This is a skill I may never master. What can I say about myself so I don't come off as a completely bonkers, nervous, distant, weird, grumpy, ditzy, confused, etc.? How about nothing? I say nothing. Perhaps to protect myself from permanent trauma, I recall precisely jack shit about what I actually said that day. I only remember the immediate aftermath, as if I went into a fugue for 2 minutes, gave my speech, then came to just as I stumbled, exhausted, back to my desk. I just sat there, my heart still racing, palms still sweating, hoping for someone to speak, fart, or yell obscenities so that my moment in the spotlight could come to the miserable end it deserved. After class, I sprinted alongside a swarm of other students to the registration office and dropped speech like an ugly baby. Relieved, I wandered around the quad with the euphoric daze of a newly liberated death row inmate. Was I really alive? Yes, oh yes, and free! Free to be silent in front of large clouds! Free to be a college sophomore! Forever! Free to take speech class again next semester! Fuck! Thanks so much for listening. If you like this story or my podcast, please share and let me know. You'll find me on Twitter at Chris KK Aria, Pinterest, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Remember, it's Chris with a K. I'm always looking for fun stories to narrate, so if you're an author or writer with a story which fits the Does This Happen to You theme, please contact me or comment on my Podbean page.